Rabbi Yisrael, we are going to be learning today. It's a very exciting day. Today is the beginning of the new cycle of Daf Yomi, which means to say we have an opportunity of learning something from the Daf Yomi cycle itself. Today is Brachas Daf Beis, and I want to start off by thanking the sponsors of this morning's shir, who Dr. Barry and Judy Cohen are sponsoring on the yard site of Barry's father, Aaron Cohen, Aaron Bunam ben Dov Berish HaLevi, Olav HaShalom, whose yard site we just passed. Is Barry here? Oh, there we are. Reb Barry. Thank you for continuing to be involved in our learning. We also I want to thank Ed Klar, who's sponsoring Lina Nishmas, his grandmother, Ziyotet, Mrs. Tessie Schwartz, Herzke Bas Shraga Feivel, and his aunt, Anita Kolak, Chava Bas Moshe, whose Yortzat are both on Asara B'Tavis this coming Tuesday. In Be'ezras Hashem, should be a continued Aliyas Neshama for them and a Chizuk for the entire Mishpacha. So let's learn a little bit. So what I wanted to do is oh, there's Ed in his irregular makom. Thank you for being part of this. I want to just start off with 4 points. We're going to learn 4 points today, and our goal is to take a look at brachos, daf, beis, I mean aleph and beis, and just take a look at some ideas which we could take with us as we start this cycle, but not just this cycle, any cycle of learning as well. So let's start at the very beginning. So it is interesting that stereo shirim, right? Nonetheless, so hopefully it is a harmony, not a cacophony. Nonetheless, we're going to start at the very beginning. So one of the questions, the first point I'd like to focus on is how we start the Gemara. If you open up any Gemara, you will always start off, actually not any Gemara, but the Talmud Bavli. You will start off and you'll notice that it starts off at the very top at Dav Beis Amun Aleph. Now, Beis is the second letter. Now, it's true that the Torah does start with the word Beis. But that's not the first letter of the alphabet. The first letter of the alphabet is Aleph. So why? What's the problem with having page one at the beginning? What's so difficult about making it simpler? You know, because then you always, whenever you say how many daf you learned, you have to subtract one always to make sure that you're there. It's very hard to set the calendars when you know that, you know, it's Nuntes blood, but it's really 58. And then the next one, you have to keep adjusting. So why can't we be a little more simple? So actually, for those who've seen, Dr. Abramson has a very great series called Jewish History on the Daf. And so the first one on Daf Brachos Daf Beis is in fact discussing the pagination. So in the pagination, he points out that when it came to the printers, at the beginning, the Gemara did not have pages. They did not have page numbers. And the way that people keep track in terms of a whole set of notes as to where each page was that's why they have a word at the bottom of the every page, which is the top word on the next page in order for people to know that a page wasn't lost. Finally, pages were introduced to the Gemara later on, but for a very simple clerical point, it was that what is page one? Page one is the shair, or the title page, right? So the reason why it's called a shair literally means in Hebrew is what? A gate, right? So the reason it's called the gate actually is it's the gateway to the Sefer, but also the picture is such, you know. So you have the beginning of the page. The Gemara has the gate and it has brachos on it, and I put an example on our pages over here where you have. An example of Zvachim on the top of the next page. So you have the gate, a very beautiful description. It's almost as if you're entering into this Masechta. So that's page one. It's interesting, when you press print these days and you want to put pages on, the computer will always give you an option in whatever word processor you're using, whether it be pages or Google pages or Word, there's always an option is where do you start the numbering. Do you start it on page two or do you start it on page one? Because some people, even though you may have a cover page, you want that to be the cover page to be page one. So that was the reason why, technically speaking. However, we understand that there's, of course, even in the technical aspects of the printing of the Gemara, there is a deeper element to it as well. So I'd like to suggest two ideas which I came across about this. One is to be found in the Sefer Tamei HaMinhagim. Very beautiful suggestion. If we have the sources that are going around, it's in source one. He says, Tam shenikra Shabbos Shuvah v'loi Shabbos Shabbos Tishuvah v'loi Shabbos Shuvah efshar leimar al derech ha'emes. He says, basically, perhaps Kabbalistically speaking, by the way, it was called Shabbos Tishuvah in his version as well. We have differently. Al derech ha'emes ki mi she'soy v'shekfar kiem kol ha'tor me'alef ha'tof be'emes adayin lo yischil leida af ha'alef. A person who thinks that they've done everything in Judaism from Aleph to Taf is the clearest indicator that they've done nothing. Right? If you think you're perfect, that's the surest sign that you're not perfect. Then you need to go back and learn even the beginning. You finish the Masechta, you think you're a big shot, that's fantastic, you make a big siyum, and there's a reminder, you didn't even get to Aleph. The point is that the more we learn, the less we know. The more we learn, the more we realize that it's a very complex material. There's no way of sort of checking off and saying, okay, done, been there, done that, got the t-shirt, moving on. It's more complicated. So therefore, the Masechta starts with the base to remind us that we're still always kind of, so to speak, missing the first step, so we have to keep going backwards. Which is why, if you have any, go to any good Siyam, what happens at a Siyam? They start the next Mishnah, because we're back to square one. So to speak, homiletically, says the Sefer HaMinhagim, that this is the idea that...
Square two, I say.
Square two, we're back to square two, there we go. So in a certain sense, there's always a level of incompletion which is incorporated into the completion itself, which is why we're missing the first, so to speak, the page one. However, there's another interesting suggestion which is made, and this is recorded in the Sichos of the Lubavitcher Rebbe in the year Tavshin Memhei. This is on Erev Shavuos. And he says a very interesting thing. He quotes the practice of the Friedeker Rebbe, or the previous Rebbe, who had the custom to learn Maseches Soita during the 49 days, during the 49 days of the Omer. Fascinating. Why was that the practice? What was that?
Does that mean he's the inventor of the
Yomi? No. So I'm not sure how this came into, if there was copyright issues when it came to the Lublin Rav, but nonetheless, this is what he would do. And so he says, but I want to ask a klotz kasha, he says. A basic question. He says, the problem is like this. Is that anybody who's opened up the soita, even though really there's mem test blood, but how many blood are there really?
48.
48. There's 48 blood. So you have a problem here. So it looks like it matches, right? After mem test blood, and there's 49 days, but really, technically speaking, there's not going to be a parity because you're missing the first page. So here's what he says. He has his answer, and I'm going to start at the bottom page one. It's in English here. And the reason I did not print out the original is because Sichos Zayin, Yiddish, not in Hebrew. Okay, so this is the translation, which is fantastic, of that particular sicha, which the follow, it goes as follows. The title page, he says, of Soita will complete the 49 pages to match it to the 49 days of Sirus. There is a 49th page, that's just the first one. He says, but this needs some explaining. The title page serves as a guard on the volume, just as the gate of a city guards against the entry of unwanted elements. On a simple level, the cover page protects the Siddur or Tehillim or Gemara from curling pages, dirt, tearing, etc. By the way, today, with the amount of sponsorship pages, we don't have no longer have that issue. You know, we have a good 20 pages of all the sponsors, right? So we've circumvented that concern. So thus, it is connected, albeit subservient, to the contents of the book itself. So that's a basic level. However, in the case of the Sfira, the first day is the most important, for on that day, the measure of barley was actually brought to the temple, and on that day we begin counting the Omer. So if you're just going to say, well, practically, but what is the Omer? The Omer is actually a grain sacrifice brought in the base of Mikdash on the first day, which is the 16th day of Nisan. So that's the most important day. That's the day we're counting from. So how can you say that's just, you know, that's just the cover page? How would a title page serve the same important function? The answer must be that the name of the tractate is printed on the title page. So in the middle of the title, there's an example I put over here on the right, is the Zvachim. So the name of the Masechta is written in the Sha'ar, in the gate. The name, of course, embodies the essence of the whole tractate. When you write the name of a book from the title page in a bill of sale, the ownership is transferred to the buyer. This is especially so when we speak of Hebrew names, as the Baal Shem Tov taught, and that the Hebrew name brings life and existence. It should be noted that the Shloss says, even the absolute ignoramus, who laments his limited understanding and grasps nothing, if you'll read with a sincere heart the names of the books of scriptures in the Oral Torah, the names of the tractates, the readings of the names of the books, will be reckoned as if he had actually read and studied them. Which means to say, don't underestimate the power of the name. The name itself incorporates everything that's to follow in a certain sense. It is the metaphysical equation of everything that's to follow. So don't underestimate that page one really is is the name of the Masechta, and that incorporates all the later material as well. So why do we start on Daf Bey? Is because now we're in the details, but let's not forget the idea and the picture, which is the most basic idea. So this is what the Lubavitcher Rebbe argues on a different perspective as to why it is that we start today. Brachos Daf Bey's. Really, it was actually Brachos itself has already been starting. The idea of Brachos has been starting already. Idea number one. Idea number two is, this is the idea I want to share. Moshe shared this with me a while back, and I just want to share it because it's such a powerful idea. And that is that when Rav Spiegel gives the daf, Rav Spiegel is giving how many cycles now? He's given three cycles of daf. So Rav Spiegel is, the Rebbe, has been given for many, many, many cycles. He's one of the earliest daf in this neighborhood. Beginning very, very early in the morning before many other very other popular people came and started giving the daf, which is wonderful. But he has been giving for a very good long time. And so the beginning of the as he starts giving the daf, this is the one thing he says. I think it's such a powerful idea. He says, look, he says, first of all, close your gemaras before you start learning. And he says, there's a pasuk in Mishlei which says, Leiv chacham liminoi veleiv ksil lismoloi. The heart of the Aquinas, thank you, sorry. It's in Aquinas Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Beis, that the heart of the wise person is on his right, and the heart of the fool is on their left. So what does that mean? You know, there's two ventricles of the heart. You know, what does that mean? You know, incoming blood, outgoing blood. What are we referring to? So he says the following, is that when you start learning, if you keep looking to the left is what is to come. You say, wait a second. You know, there's a lot of pages ahead. They look like really long pages. And in fact, if I look at it, I look at the shelf, and I see that after that, there's Shabbos, and there's Eruvin, and there's Psachim. I'm never gonna climb this mountain. If I'm looking forwards, there's no possible way. It's Leiv Ksil is smaller. If you look to the left, which is going forward, that's a Ksil. That's the heart of a fool. Leiv Chachom Liminoi means to say, look back. Look at all the steps you've taken so far. Look at every blood. You're now in this blood. This is what we're doing right now. That is the Leiv Chacham, is not to look to the top of the mountain, but to look at every step of the way, and perhaps even backwards to get the chizuk. It's interesting that there was an article written a couple years ago, which was entitled "What Happened to Your Goals?" and it's the science of motivation to keep yourself to help you finish what you started. Very fascinating article, which was written in the Chicago Booth Review. And it a lot of interesting suggestions that they made. One interesting argument that was made in this article, there are many, is that they've noticed an interesting movement in terms of motivation. And that is that people are highly motivated at the beginning of a project, it wanes towards the middle of the project, and at the end there's a renewal. So as an example, just one case that they gave, take a look at this on the top of page 3. Interesting suggestion. So similarly, when researchers, the second paragraph, recorded how observant Jews lit candles throughout the 8-day holiday of Hanukkah. Now, I believe we're referring to people outside of the technical Orthodox community. You'll see why in a second. They saw people lag in the middle of the task. On the first night, 79% of the 202 people they observed reported lighting candles. Baruch Hashem, I could say that we have a higher statistic. This is only on a Kabbalistic college campus. Right, but that dropped to 49% by the fifth night, before rebounding to 57% on the final night. And the more observant the participants were, the more likely they were to light candles at the beginning and the end of the festival, but behave less like religious participants in the middle, the researchers write. Which is why, if we think about the candle lighting is only 8 days, but think about a 7.5-year cycle, that's why you get so much excitement at the end and at the beginning. Because right, in the last few months, everyone wants to get on the bandwagon, which is fantastic. At the beginning, everyone wants to get on, and this is the exciting time. So how do you burst this bubble? So how do you solve this statistics? How do we get around this then? What's the answer?
Look to the right.
The answer is make the beginnings and the ends closer to each other. You understand? If people are excited around beginnings and ends and the middles are the problems, so let's eliminate as many middles as we can. That makes sense? So therefore, well, how do you do that? So therefore, like they said, Fishbach and Touré Tillery saw the same pattern when they asked people to do a series of shapes. Okay, and then it carries on talking about this. In another example, he says, so I want to go there to the last line. He says, it says like this, break a goal into shorter sub-goals to maximize beginning and end, and to minimize middles, says Fishbach. Instead of an annual goal, set monthly goal. Instead of weekly, make it daily. Fascinating, right? So meaning to say, if my goal is not to be able to finish Shas, My goal is to finish brachos. Or my goal is not even to finish brachos, is to finish the perek mei masai. Or even if that's not that, it's just to finish the blood today. If my goal is smaller, then I'm more likely to be able to achieve the goal I set out, rather than a much more, we'll call it, you know, ambitious perspective, where we fall prey to human nature, where things become complicated. I remember I was once working in an organization. They said that, you know, you have interdepartmental meetings, you know, and everybody has these, you know, wonderful aspirations. And the way it usually goes is like this. So somebody says, you know what we should do? We should send out interdepartmental memos so everybody knows what's going on in the different departments. So that's a great idea. You know what we should do? We should have a blurb from different people every month, every week from that department. Fantastic. So that's a great idea. You know what we should do? We should also have, you know, maybe a picture and a profile of somebody who works in this department so people get to know them. And at the end of the meeting, they build up this entire ideology. And then somebody says, you know, that's not doable. And then they scrap the whole idea. But why couldn't you just do the first idea? Why couldn't you just start with the first step? It doesn't have to be the perfect. But the point, it doesn't have to be so big. The point is just make it smaller goals. And that's the way to get it. That's lichora. That's what's happening over here is Lev Chacham Liminoi. Let's not look always to the biggest and the furthest and the most ambitious. Let's start at the beginning and stick with it. This is idea number two. Now, idea number three we're going to learn together is more of an interesting halachic one, and that is if you take a look at our mission itself. So I actually included Brachos Daf Beis and Aleph at the very end of our pages over here. This is actually the first daf over here in Brachos. The mission tells us the following. So let's try to see if we can get a perspective on this. The mission tells us the following. Let's learn the Mishnah together. May Mosa Korinus Shema Ba'arvin. When do you read Shema at night? So when did the first blood actually start to brachos? Last night, folks. We could have got an early start already, right? So it says Mishar Shakoanim Nichnasim Leichol B'Truma. So at Sofa Ashmura Rishon Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. So from the time that the Kohanim would go to eat their Truma after the process of semi purity at this point in time until the end of the first watch. All these are discussed in the Gemara. It's not that early. It's not a third of the night, it's really half of the night. Rabbon Gamliel Omer, Ad Shiale Amud HaShachar, until dawn the next morning. And the Gemara, the mission then records a story. Maaseh Ubao Bonov mi Beis HaMishteh. There was a wedding. They came back from a wedding. His sons came. Amru Loi Loi Korinus HaShema. Amru Lohem, Im Loi Alo Amud HaShachar, Chayovin Atem Likrois. He says, you can read. If it hasn't yet reached dawn, you can still read. They came back from the wedding late. No problem, you can still read. That was consistent with what he just expressed. He says, Loi zu bilvad, Elo, ko ma sh'amru chachomim ad chatzos mitzvosan ad sh'yalo mura shachar. He says, anytime you see that there's an end time, which is midnight, or really that's mid relative night to the beginning and end of the night, it really goes until dawn the next morning. And then the commissioner says, Hector, chalovim ve'evorim mitzvosan ad sh'yalo mura shachar, v'kol ne'echolim liyam echad mitzvosan ad sh'yalo mura shachar. So then he gives another two examples when it comes to Achilas Kodshim, that really it's till the morning. And finally, he says, why was the Chachamim said only until Chatzos? Because you know what it's like. You come back, you say, I'm just going to take a cup of tea. I'm just going to read something in bed. I'll get to Shema later on. Right? And the next thing you know, it's three snoozes later, and it's whatever time it is in the morning, right? And so that's the Chachamim said. So there's an interesting debate in Halacha as to what's the Lachadchil and what's the Bediavad. So just to give you just a quick rundown, the Rashba and the Rosh, two of the early Rishonim say over here, that really, really technically speaking, the mitzvah, the Machlokes over here is the following. Is that really, all the time, the Chachamim essentially say that Lachadchil, any time from stars out till midnight is fine, it's fair game. Which means to say that aside for a few activities which draw a person and will distract a person, really technically speaking, a person, according to Chachamim, can do Kriya Shema anytime. 10 p.m., 11 p.m., even 12 p.m. before the Chatzos, which is around usually between 12 and 1. Okay. However, and Rabban Gamliel says, L'charchila all the way till Amud HaShachar. That's the way to understand the Machlokes. That's what the Rosh and the Rashba say. That's one extreme. Very open. In a certain sense, it's all open. It's only before the stars out that there's some restrictions as to what one can eat and do. The other extreme is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says, no. The Chachamim mean you need to get it as close to stars out as possible. That's what they're saying. The very beginning. And b'di'evid, if you were later, you can still say it until midnight. So it's much more, we'll call it front-loaded. Whereas Rabban Gamliel says, you know what, b'di'evid, meaning Second tier you have later on, but that's not the way we should be operating our lives. We shouldn't be procrastinating and letting go until later. So those are the two extremes of the opinions in Halacha of what the Machlokes is based on the later Gemaras. But here's what the Rambam says. The Rambam lives in the middle ground, and then we're going to look at the way the Rambam is described in the Sefer called Rosh Yosef. Rosh Yosef is a lesser known Sefer on Brachos. This year on a number of Mesechtos. When I was leaving Neri Yisrael, I was about to go to YU, and I asked one of my teachers, Rav Tzvi Berkowitz. I said, "I'm learning Brachos next year. What is there something you would suggest I should learn on this Mesechta?" And he said, "You should get a Rosh Yosef." So this is the Rosh Yosef. The Rosh Yosef is actually the Prima Godin. The Prima Godin is one of the paramount halachic commentators on Shulchan Aruch. He comments on, if you look at a Shulchan Aruch, whenever you look at a sefer, you have the centerpiece, which is actually the actual text itself. So the Shulchan Aruch is in the center, and then along either side you have the two most prevalent Noisei Kelim commentaries. So you have, let's say, as an example, in Or HaChaim, we have the Magen Avraham and the Taz, the other way around. The Taz is earliest, is in the inner column, and the Magen Avraham in the outer column. Those are the two predominant Noisei Kelim. They bear the arms, so to speak, of the Shulchan Aruch. So what did the Prima Godin do? He wrote a commentary, a meta commentary on both of those Noisei Kelim. So the Prima Godin is essentially a composite of two Pirushim, one called the Eshel Avraham and the other one called Mishpatzei Zav, on the Magen Avraham and the Turei Zav. And so he, in a certain sense, brings to bear the later halachic perspectives on the Noisei Kelim. That's where he is, and he is prolific. He's on all Dalei Chelka Shulchan Aruch. It's unbelievable. So on the Gemara Yosef's Pirushim, this is what he says. He presents the third approach in source 4. He says, "Ashita Agimel Hi Shita Zarambam Perak Alav Mikriyas Shema Pehalachates Me Mosai Zman Kriyas Shema." When can you do the mitzvah Kriyas Shema? Mitzvah So Mitzesa Koychavim Ad Chatzos. The mitzvah is from stars out till Chatzos. Kedei LaHarchik Esa Adam Min Apshia. So a person should avoid. What's the word Pshia mean? Negligence. What has the Rambam done to change from the Mishnah? So the Mishnah says, why was there the restriction of Chatzos, according to the Chachamim, to avoid a person getting into the state of Avera? Meaning, once you get past Chatzos, you're going to be committing an Avera. What does the Rambam say? To avoid Pshia, to avoid negligence. Which means to say the Rambam is almost a composite. He says the mitzvah is to do it as early as possible. Right? But should you go after that, it's not that you lost the opportunity, like Rabbeinu Yonah would say, but you're now in B'dievet territory. Now you're putting yourself in a compromised position where you're likely to be negligent. What the Rambam is saying is a very important insight into the human psyche. And that is that most of us are not struggling between, we'll call it mitzvah and avera. Most of us are struggling between, we'll call it neutrality and pshia, negligence. We find ourselves in circumstances. When Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe when he was a young man, He was asking about life and directions and big decisions, and he says, "You know, I find myself in a place." And the Lubavitcher Rebbe interrupted him and says, "You don't find yourself in a place. You put yourself in a place. And if you want to, you will remove yourself from that place and you put yourself in another place." We are not the victims of circumstance. What the Chachamim are saying is, "L'harchich hazaram mipshia." Avoid situations where later on we'll say, "There's nothing I could do. I was tchilasa b'pshia b'sofa b'oines. I had no choice." Stephen Covey, I love this example. Stephen Covey was a professor in university, and he had a student who said he needed to be excused from class. So he says, "Well, what's the problem?" He says, "Well, you know, I had to leave because I'm on the tennis team, and the playoffs, the playoff practices, so I can't come to class." He says, "No, let's reframe it. You can come to class. But you decided in your systems of priority that class is less important than the practice of the playoffs. That's fine. But take control of your life. Realize that you are making a decision and don't feel that you're the victim of the circumstance." Says the Rambam, "L'harchik es ha'adam min ha'pshia." Let's make the decisions now, not to arrive at situations later on where we had no choice. That's the framing over here, between the B'lechadchil and B'dievet in this Mishnah, which is to be found over here.
Isn't Pesha usually used as a mezid, really?
Yes, there's a negative. Yes, there's a negative connotation to it.
But it's contrasted, so this is a little out of
context. It's a little bit of both. That's where he puts it. Anyways, Lemaisa, one last idea, and I do want to end because we actually have a program starting, God willing, downstairs in just a few minutes where we have where we have Baruch Hashem, the starting of the daf with the OU program. Rabbi Fine is going to be here, and hopefully Rabbi Aaron Khan as well. So it's a fantastic program to start. I want to just end off with one last idea that just to take with us, and that is to be found in Brachos Daf Beis Amud Beis. So this is actually at the end of our notes, and it's the very last page. I put a little star and asterisk on the right side, where we have the statement of Rabbi Yehuda. So here, how's it goes? 1 second, just to find the thing over here. Yes, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, and part of the discussion is when it is that one can start, when is that one can start saying Kriya Shema, and we hear an interesting opinion. The very last line, the Gemara on Beis and Beis says Rabbi Yossi, Adam Rabbi Yossi, Bein Hashmoshos Keref Ayin. So Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, says that there's a process, there's this place of, we'll call it twilight. There is, according to Rabbi Yossi, there's no twilight. It's either day or it's night. You know that, unfortunately, when are the most amount of, you know, terrorist attacks committed are usually? Twilight hours. Why? Because that's when the night vision is still not working and human vision is still, it's not good enough. That's when, unfortunately, terrorists take advantage of this moment. Why? Because, as we know, what happens is the sun sets, but it's not dark yet. Certainly around here. If you watch when the sun sets and you can work out the astronomical sunset, and you see that, you know, where are we today? We're in the 4:30s. We're in the late 4:30s around now. So 1 second, we're at 4:29. Yes, I think sunset today is around 4:39, 4:40. As the sunset is today. So take a look outside at 4:39, 4:30 around here. And even though we can't see our horizons because of buildings, you'll see it's not dark. So we wait for a period until the sun is sufficiently behind the horizon. And then finally the dark is able to be seen and appreciated. That period we call Bein Hashmashos. So in Israel, it's much quicker. It's a much quicker period of twilight because it is lower in terms of the latitude. Here in America, in New York, Rav Moshe said it's 42 minutes, and many people for Daraisas or Machmir for 50 minutes after Shkia, after sunset. That's the twilight zone. So it happens to be a machlokes, halachically speaking, not astronomically, but halachically speaking. Is there the space we call twilight, which is neither here nor there? Or do we say that it's a care of eye? There is a moment in which day ends and night begins, and there's no doubt whatsoever. That's the machlokes Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, which is recorded in this Gemara. By the way, La'alof for today, just to understand this is why when we talk about Shabbos and Yom Kippur are a 25-hour experience. Why? Because we paskin, like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is this notion of Bein Hashmashos, what do? We take Shabbos in at the earliest possible point, which is sunset, and we take Shabbos out at stars out, which could really be now essentially another 50 minutes later. So that's why our halachic day is a 25-hour period, l'chumra on both ends. So what is the meaning of this machlokes? So for this, we're going to look into the writings of Rav Kook. Rav Kook has a sefer which we're learning every Shabbos afternoon called Ein Ayah, which is, Ein means the eye of Ayah is Avram Yitzchak HaKoyen, which is the initials of his name. And he says the following very beautiful, very, very powerful insight. Here's what he says, and it relates to every aspect of our lives in Source 5 on page 4. He says the following. The first bolded line is the quotation of the Gemara. It says, I'd like to give a suggestion as to what's really going on over here. Whether twilight is a fixed period, or there's no fixed period, it's an automatic, it's a subliminal transfer. So he quotes a medrash, which says that light, when Hashem created it, was metaphorical for the acts of goodness that human beings bring to the world, and darkness is a metaphorical description of negativity, which is brought to the world. So, okay, let's take that. That's step one. He quotes Rabbeinu Bechaye, who says, now he asks the question, this is a fantastic philosophical question. Is there such thing as a neutral action in life? Can you ever say that what you're doing wasn't good, wasn't bad, it's just neutral? I'm eating, I'm walking, I'm swimming. Is it a mitzvah? No, not a mitzvah. Is it an avera? not really right. Is there such a thing as a neutral action? That's what Rabbi Eden Bechaya asks. Is the hechlit she'ein b'neihem a mutzah klal? He says there's no such thing as a neutral action. She'arei ha'hechrech hu michlal ma'aseh mitzvah va'moisar nichnas b'shar ha'osur. He says that if you need something, if it's necessary, so for instance, if I'm swimming because it's for exercise, to keep me healthy, to be a good eved la'Hashem, then it's a mitzvah. If it's unnecessary, then it essentially is an avera. Because why am I wasting my life? You have a certain amount of energy every single day. You've got a certain lifespan, and we don't know when that ends. Right? So we're here for a purpose. And what are we doing? You know, on office hours, we're busy on social media. God sent us to this world, and what are we doing? We're elsewhere. How productive are we? So says Rabbeinu Bechaya, one has to calibrate one's life with saying the following question. Is this an act of service to God or is it not? And if it's not, you're missing the point. It's black or white, there's no gray. That's the way he looks at it. That requires a little bit of adjusting of our schedules. If we are to now sit down at the end of our days and say, wait a second, you know, so is everything necessary? Those vacations, is it really, really necessary? Is it really necessary? That's the question that Rabbeinu Bechaya asks of us. Omnon, yesh lodun bidvar of zal. He says, I have to question his words. On the side of him, divrei ha-ra'avad b'shara kedusha, shebesefer ba'ale ha-nefesh, the Ravad, Rabbeinu Avraham, in his sefer called Ba'ale ha-nefesh, says the following. Mashma sheyesh metzios gam kein ha-dvar shel rishus. He says, there is the possibility of rishus. By the way, the Ba'ale ha-nefesh is remarkable insights into human psychology. One example is, just a worthwhile practice, just as a side point, the Ba'ale ha-nefesh says that when a person eats, a person should make sure if it's a good food, you're really enjoying this dish, to leave one corner of the dish uneaten. Try that next time you're eating. Try a first helping, folks. First helping, right? So leave a little bit on the corner of the dish because you're exercising control over your food. That's one of the things the Ba'ale ha-nefesh says. It's almost like the truma, right, of your food, the control you have over your food, of your gastronomical activities. So says the Ba'ale ha-nefesh, there is such a thing as a neutral activity. Where it's not good, it's not bad. If light is the actions of the good people and dark is the actions of the negative people, so if day is good actions and night is negative actions, so what's Ben Ashmosh and what's twilight? Twilight is neutral actions. There's a space enough where the actions don't go either way. They could be marshaled one way or the other, depending on the usage and the intellectual honesty, but they aren't necessarily per se a mitzvah or an avera. Rabbi Yehuda Sover, Shiesh b'mitzios inin erushus kadas arrived. Alkei noisen hu gamkein shir mugbal ben ashmoshes. Rabbi Yehuda Sverle, de'ein she'ena b'mitzios v'poyal davar shorushus. He says, in practical terms, there's no such thing as neutrality in life. No action can be unwarranted. That might be in theory. That's why there's no such thing as twilight. He's not talking about an astronomical reality. He's not saying if I walk outside, the sun set. What he's saying is that in reality, there's no action which does not fall into one of two categories, and that is either mitzvah or an avera, depending on the idea. Now, you notice over here, he says in actuality as opposed to potential. Why is potential different? Because in potential, going to play tennis, as an example, is something which could be a mitzvah. It could be something which provides me the necessary relief to be able to continue acting as a sane human being. It could be giving me the exercise necessary, the social components of my life necessary to be able to, right? So in theory, but the question is, why am I actually doing it? That's the actuality. In that case, when it comes to actuality, it's either night or day. You should know that when Rav Kook became the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, 1920, so he served as the Rav, and he dealt with everything, from the smallest to the biggest of questions that came up. And what happened was that people would walk into his house at any point of the day and the night, and his family were concerned for his health. So what do? They put up on the door a very, very simple technological advance, which was a sign-up sheet. You know, 9 to 9:15, 9:30, they'd made appointments. And so if the appointments were taken up, that would be it. You'd have to come back tomorrow. And so after the first day, they thought they were very proud of themselves. They came back and they found that the sign had disappeared. So there's always somebody, right? So they made a new roster for the week. and the second day, and a few people signed up, and then it disappeared. So the third day, they put it up, and they made sure that somebody was watching, and they saw Rav Kook took it down. He himself took it down. And they asked him, you know, Rebbe, what's going on? He said he believed that he was a servant to the Klal to such a degree that there was no space. This is Rav Kook talking over here at the end. I want to just add one last story, because this story is just so remarkable. It's just that one of the most powerful stories. I'm reading An Angel Among Men at the same time as we're learning Rav Kook this year, because it's very important to be able to see the Torah as well as the experience. So there was a story that there was only one time that Rav Kook ever closed the door of his office, that he ever, so to speak, locked out people. And that was a couple hours in the morning when he learned Gemara himself. And so he was learning with his chevrosa, and one morning they forgot to lock the door. So in walks an individual, his name was Mr. Ben Yehuda. Who's Mr. Ben Yehuda? He wasn't the street named after him, right? So why did they name a street after him? Because he was the developer of Hebrew, the modern sophisticated Hebrew. So he came in to Rav Kook to ask him a few shilas, because Rav Kook was one of the leaders of the generation, and Rav Kook was very proud of his Hebrew. He used to speak in the most complex Hebrew. If you ever read any of the writings of Rav Kook, this is the easy ones, the Ein Hayah. Right, when you get to his Igros and Oros, unbelievably complicated, poetic Hebrew. So Mr. Ben Yehuda comes in and he turns to Rav Kook and he asks him a few questions, not realizing clearly that there's a chavrusa happening. And Rav Kook answers very patiently. And at the end of the conversation, after he has finished all his questions, he turns to him and he says, "Mr. Ben Yehuda, is it not time for tshuva?" And there was a silence, and Mr. Ben Yehuda says, "Ulai," and he walks out. Turns out that was, I believe the date was Yud Tes Kislev, I believe, of that year. And later that night, Mr. Ben Yehuda passed away. This is 1922. And the Chevrusa said that he believed that Rav Kook's afforded him the ulai was his hirur tshuva, was the necessary hirur tshuva to allow Mr. Ben Yehuda to do the tshuva of that. Just to understand the complexity of this. What Rav Kook says over here is that when we look at life, there are neutral places in life. There are. But it really depends. And sometimes, even though we don't paskin like Rabbi Yossi, sometimes it requires a recalibration to say, what is it of the life? Where do I really have time? Do I really not have time? Am I the victim of circumstance, or can I make choices in my life to really harness every activity? When I get onto that treadmill, when I'm eating, can I say that this is l'shem shamayim? This activity is something which is special. It's elevated. It's not just mundane. In the meantime, I look forward, God willing, for many years to come, to watch all of our successes together as we move forward into this incredible process.